find out.
Could you tell me what it is that the model investigates? There's a section headed to the function of the model, and then rather disconcertingly, it seems to me not to explain what that function is. What is the model for?
Before I started, basically, it was just to test out any concept or idea that came up in the group. So someone within the group.
To test them?
To test them out, to see whether they had any, whether they made sense or nonsense, or whether they had meaning, or whether they were meaningless. Were they worth continuing?
But how would
continuing
one model serve that? I suppose someone offered the concept. Extraterrestrial intelligence.
Could we go back to your question of what the function was? Is that what we're still talking about? The function of the model?
No.
Because you raised that question.
I raised that a moment ago, then to develop the conversation a little while you were. The concept of extraterrestrial or artificial intelligence, for instance, the notion that a machine might not only simulate human intelligence, but in some substantial sense actually be intelligent. What would it be to test this concept? Would it be to find out whether this claim is true? And the first step in that case, presumably, would be to find out, understand what the claim amounts to, what it means to suggest that an inorganic structure might actually be intelligent. I'm not quite sure how one would go about it, but it seems to me that the kind of strategies that obviously offer themselves are not such as are clearly encapsulated in that model. So
one of our main considerations to make whatever the idea concept was, to see if it had any meaning, or whether it was a meaningful idea to put through and work with.
Well, this is where I'm having difficulty with the language. Meaning?
Meaning is that we establish a relationship between fiction and fact. Separate things out, that would be the function of the model. To differentiate whatever went through it into fantasy, fiction, or fact, and the meaningful relationship between fiction and fact especially. And fantasy would be something that would fall outside of that boundary. It would be a personal coded language that would be self-referential and wouldn't be a social discourse. So if something came through the model and turned out to be fantasy, then it wouldn't have this element in it that was speakable or that we could talk about in any of our image or verbal based languages. So
yeah.
It would be a special coded thing that was too personal.
It's not clear how the model helps here. The suggestion in the document is that facts are in the world, that fiction is a description or account of the facts.
A representation or a description.
Representation or description of the facts. This is not, of course, early Wittgenstein. This is not Wittgenstein of the Tractatus, referring back to the conversation of the day. I mean, the Tractatus opens with the world is everything that is the case.
Mm-hmm. And facts are the case, and facts are the relationships between things, but facts are a set of relationships, so that if you're talking about a fact, you're talking about a whole context of relationships and not a thing that's completely separate in the world and existent on its own, as if it had no dependence on anything else. So a fact then would be a set of contingencies, a social situation, or even an object that
was
sitting
on
the floor.
Is the sum of facts, not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Packet says. So packets are in language, not in the world.
Oh, that's maybe that may be a misunderstanding then, because I see facts as not as represented in fiction, and that fiction refers to these facts, that the facts can be apprehended outside of a fiction system. If we encounter something as directly as possible before we make up a word for it, or
a
symbol or sign.
What distinction between practice and thinking? We have an everyday intuitive concept of people, etc. We have cups and saucers, plates and people. These are things. Facts are structural relations between things as described or exhibited in language. It is the case that the tray is on the table. That is a fact. Mm-hmm. The fact is that the tray is on the table. That statement of fact is, of course, essentially linguistic.
Mm-hmm. And you couldn't talk about the teacup without talking about maybe the tray and the table.
You couldn't talk about it, but you could break it or bring from it.
And that's another relationship you're already into. It seems almost impossible not to get into it. Which is what the interesting thing about what Wittgenstein is proposing there, that whatever you talk about, you're into another set of relationships. And even if you talk about the teacup and consider its molecular structure, that you've got this system of electrical charges going on inside of that thing, that it's not a static object itself, but it's composed of atoms and neutrons and so on, bound into this whirling kind of construction. It's a whole system of movement inside of the teacup. So everything seems to be a relationship right up and down the scale of the structure of life. But there is maybe no such thing as thing without talking about this beautiful context that it's within. So maybe that's what we're trying to establish between the fact and the fiction. The fiction being the representation system that describes reality, and reality being the whole system of facts that is very difficult to approach except through a fiction system. But it's not so much an assumption that it's there. Because Jeff gives this example of someone who first comes on sand, maybe after the last ice age, and he's never experienced it before, doesn't have a word for it yet. And all he can do is approach it directly and experience it and let it filter through his fingers and so on and come to an understanding of it without the use of a fiction system. And today we're so layered and coded under these fiction systems that we almost accept them for fact. We say that what happens on the television is really happening. And if I read something in the newspaper, well, that is true, but yet it's just gone through a filter, hasn't it? It's gone through another fiction system. And we're taking the fiction for the truth, when probably before mechanical reproduction and prior to a lot of these, of all our present systems of representing the world, we had a more direct experience. And it's hard to get back to, but that doesn't deny that it can be done or that it's probably still there, the fact. Because I have that experience with a camera. When I approach something, I have to, at the moment I'm taking the picture, I have to shut down all fiction systems and feel, think directly about contacting what it is I'm working with and not fall back on any kind of representation other than the direct experience of what I'm doing. That's a real difficult area to kind of define, explain, or talk about. And perhaps we were just setting up the possibility here with this fiction fantasy thing.
There's a lot of heavy metaphysics in there. It isn't clear, you know, whether your metaphysical system is realist or idealist or nominalist. I can't tell from...
I didn't needed to be metaphysics.
From what you're saying. But it is.
That's a hard one.
It's very heavily metaphysical. And it sounds strikingly uncommonsensical in a way that it demands explanation. Why would anyone talk so uncommonsensically as that without having strong philosophical justification? Don't we ordinarily suppose that the world is full of things and we can talk about, describe and represent these things in various ways? And we're concerned quite often with deciding which is the best way to talk about things, the best way to represent things.
But haven't we now come away from that? Because we haven't now got the ability to talk about the things to make hardly any sense of them. Because,
well, I don't find myself helpless in that respect. It does seem to me that there are cups and saucers and tables and
carpets
and when you've got a picture, atoms.
When you've got a picture on the wall.
Pictures.
So it doesn't necessarily give forth meaning or a piece of installation on the floor. It's just that there was a man walking around the Northern Territory last night on television, which again might not mean anything at all. But he was walking around a campsite which had Chinese people in it when they were up there digging gold. And he was walking around it, and it was very much like little installations all the way around. But every single bit had meaning in it that was a perception, and he could understand it by looking at it and draw information from there. So it seemed to actually have much more of an identity in reality. Mm-hmm.
So we've got meaning going now in two quite different senses. We've had meaning in the semantic sense, the meaning of the word, phrase. We're offering now meaning in the sense of general significance. What this means to me is some sentimental recollection of my childhood. What this means is that Indians passed here 2 hours ago.
It's conveying of meaning by understanding the thing in the first place. And understanding.
It's a whole range of ways of understanding.
But I suppose I think linking straight into a perception.
What meaning of a word? The first level of tackling a problem like this, you look it up in the Science Oxford Dictionary.
But is that the end of it?
The document gives you the meaning of words.
That's just the start, isn't it?
If you want the meaning of a mark, that's different. You don't look it up in the dictionary.
You look to yourself in some
way. Well, not necessarily. It depends on the kind of mark.
It depends on the mark.
If it's a bloody heart wrapped up in a newspaper you can find under your bed, as I did once, think that perhaps this is some kind of sinister warning, and you discover that it isn't like that, it's just that burglars carry a poison bait around the dogs. And if there isn't a dog and their pockets are full of this stuff, then they chuck out the poison bait and use their pockets to carry away the loot. The meaning of this object is not in that case semantic. Roughly the significance, the role of the object is interpreted in a certain way. And of course, objects are multivalent, they can be interpreted in all kinds of ways.
But it obviously had a function and it had a meaning. And the meaning could be maybe after some work, derived at.
Well, things don't have a meaning. They have a great range of meanings. They lend themselves to interpretation. Can interpret a cup. The meaning of that for an extraterrestrial intelligence visiting the world, people who don't normally drink. The meaning of this object is that it's to contain fluids or satisfy the organic needs of human beings. It might take a while to find out the meaning of this artifact. You visit an exotic culture and come from. Or its meaning might be the satisfaction it gave its maker, or its sociologically as expression of its role in mass production. But if it's on a stage of development of the Industrial Revolution, and so on, there are as many meanings as we have ways of approaching, interpreting, and understanding the world. It has a scientific meaning, a sociological meaning, a historical meaning, a personal meaning, a symbolic meaning. However, could all of these meanings be compressed together in a single interpretive model?
That's what we're trying to do.
But why would we want to do that? Isn't it marvellous to be able to unwrap things historically, sociologically, economically, psychologically?
Because I keep referring to the actual production of a piece of work and the importance then of that having some meaning that somebody can actually achieve or get at. And something that...
A piece of artwork.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically that's what, when an idea goes through, it will be produced, whether it's artwork in the sense that we know it, or it's something that actually comes out a little bit differently.
To ask the question, what does this work mean? Dozens of ways. Mm. What does it mean in terms of contemporary art history? What does it mean in terms of the biography of its author? What does it mean in terms of the financial fortunes the dealer who's invested in? Yeah, what does it mean endlessly?
But if one was perceiving...
So this sense of meaning is just what significance has it, what role has it in this, that and the other conceptual framework? It has as many roles as there are conceptual frames can be applied to it. There is no canonical meaning for an object. Objects don't.
But there's often, like the cup and saucer, there is its basic functional meaning, which is what we can... And then there's the implied meanings that we can deduce from seeing it and seeing it in relationship to its function, that we can expand on ourselves. So what the initial thing is, the cup and saucer is an initial meaning in itself. It has a functional meaning. It does a job. And then the person who's looking at that can then... From that solid ground, can actually build their ideas on it. Now, unless you actually give the person maybe the solid ground so that their implications or what they want to imply on the work or from the work can actually not just take them on a trail that doesn't lead them anymore.
I think some of those kinds of dissatisfaction, like in sci-fi, sort of evolved through the art school system. Progressed through that, and each time I was trying to go beyond what I was doing, because I was just satisfied with what I was doing. I mean, it didn't have any meaning. Yeah. And that I, through the painting system, which is like using firstly decoration of people's walls, it didn't have any meaning to me. I wanted to do it more than that. So you keep on expanding and expanding till you get to the point that you're sort of caught up, if you like, with the trend at the time.
This is a new sense of meaning.
Yeah, a new sense of meaning. And,
this is not a semantic sense. No. It's not the sense of the role of the object in various contexts. It's its role in your life. It's role in contemporary art history. It's rather you're asking what sort of significance has this object that gives it some peculiar relevance, importance as an artwork. I tell you, it can have all kinds of significance, giving it relevance in other respects. So, it could very well be your last creative gesture, or the work on which you're staking all. If this is not well received, you say, I shall go and cut my throat. That would give it, in terms of your biography, an enormously significant meaning. It could be an object. Is the suggestion then that there is just one kind of meaning, one kind of significance? that artworks as such have, by virtue of being artworks, a significance that's not biographical, not art historical, it's not sociological, it's not sentimental. Is this what you're feeling for?
Yeah, my particular individual viewpoint is probably from a political standpoint, from a socialist. But I feel that my involvement in art has to be fit within that framework. So it has some sort of social.
I suppose role. What is the political significance of this work? Then I suppose you would like to ask whether, I would like to ask whether what we're talking about is the political significance that you wish it had, you intend to have, specifically, or the political significance that it does as a matter of fact have, whatever your intention might have been. I mean, a Marxist like Roger Taylor, for example, would say about some works of art, not perhaps yours, but perhaps yours for all I know, the significance of this is that it is a very typical device for ensuring the hegemony of the ruling class. It's part of the conspiracy of oppression, whatever the artist meant. That's certainly an account of the meaning of the work, but that's not what you're looking for.
No.
Are you looking then for an account?
Well, I can't really talk in the group personally, but what I'm involved with is really it's self exploration. So I'm using the art activity itself.
The thing that seems to be again in the sense of the group, we're all talking from individual perceptions of things, so Donald's having to answer separately each of our different interpretations.
Yeah, we're hoping that the model as a group situation that the individual then can go through that, so the whole group can be involved in it.
And it wouldn't give just one meaning, but it gives it multiple possibilities for meaning from many viewpoints.
Didn't you say in the morning, Don, that you'd arrived at this sort of stage with the EAF, where you then decided that in future meetings, that you would devote a series of seminars to precisely what we're at this moment? And you didn't devise a model so much as...
No. Well, we met to talk about the nature of art and the nature of the organisation of the EAF and its approach to art. We did that regularly, as you all did.
Mm. But I got the impression from what you said that you had looked at what you were doing and you had to decide almost the same way as we have in the last few weeks, why we are meeting and why we are continuing to meet as a group.
Yes.
And then you felt that there had to be some structure put into place.
You're doing this, and your tentative conclusion at the moment is that the way through is via this model.
Right.
And I'm helping you. I hope to sharpen up the perception, this perception of the model by leading you not to clearly understand what the model is and what its function is. I'm not leading this.
We were examining with a set system.
Yeah.
And we're setting the system.
Now I begin to
worry examination.
Whether perhaps I am developing a genuine criticism of the procedure.
Well,
if the model goes further than merely providing a kind of promise to examine or analyze suggestions that arise, it promises to examine these questions in consistent way, whatever the question, that there is one method of examination question that will be more likely to yield results than a range of ways of examining questions. Now this just doesn't strike me as being intuitively plausible. It seems to me that questions can be examined in a vast range of ways, and I can't see immediately why it is, or how it might be, that this vast range of ways could be collected and consolidated into a single, simple methodology. I can't see how a historical examination can be assimilated into a psychological examination, a logical examination, a biographical examination, and so on. What's wrong with the ordinary human processes of taking an idea and subjecting it to all kinds of examination?
Well, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. I mean, you're going to take an idea, a conception, or an art piece, and you're going to expose it to a historical discussion or a sociological discussion or all these other parameters that we've offered here that are broad umbrellas to talk about the world.
Well, let's do that. Let's take the idea that birds' nests are works of art.
I don't think you'd work it that way, because first of all, you decided that was an issue that would be worth putting through the model. If it was an issue that was going to cloud your discussion.
Help me to understand it. Put the idea of birds' nests are works of art through the model. And let me see what it means.
See what happens to it. You have to discuss it from one of these viewpoints that we've indicated here, which would be its natural context.
Well, the person who's bringing the birds' nest up would relate to their feelings about why they brought the birds' nest up. And they would say, well, I was interested in the birds' nest because of such and such, maybe because of its structure. And then you'd find, or you'd relate that in a larger sense, to where you felt the structure fitted in context.
When you say that, you're just talking to me.
No,
it's like an ordinary human being.
Yeah.
I want to hear you put this idea through the model.
But if you
see the ringer in action.
if you're the person bringing up the concept of the bird's nest as a work of art, then you have to introduce it into the model. So that's your role in this particular hypothetical situation.
I don't know how to do this.
The first thing we
just generated the suggestion. It seems to me that bird's nests are works of art.
Well, we have to ask you what its social implication was, how it related to the human environment, for one thing. Because we want to know, as people, and what our human connection
the
bird's nest, how that relates to us as people and humans, and what that does to inform us of how we might structure our world. If you're presenting the structure of this bird nest as an example of an artwork, well, we want to begin to relate to it, right? So I guess we'd start talking about the structure, whether we could gain, learn, or derive anything from the structure of this animal conception of how to have a home or an environment, and how that might begin to relate to what we might want out of an artwork to represent a shelter or some sort of living kind of environment. So it might be very interesting, the bird's nest, as an artwork, as an informative kind of gesture as to what people might do when considering things like shelters within their work, you know. So it could be a very interesting proposition. I think that's where we'd start, probably, would be from this element of relationship, trying to get it to relate to something in the social context, or you could take it from the perceptual context. You want to look at the thing, actually. See how it was composed. Talk about its structure, its perceptual structure. It's obviously a visual presentation, first of all. So it's not a verbal one. So you want to talk about its visual structure. I'm just offering some ways of getting at it, pulling it in.
This is what putting an idea through the model is.
Well, we haven't done it yet, so this is what we think it is. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's first time we've used a model.
I don't have a bird's nest to show you, so you can't examine it perceptually. I'm offering you the idea that bird's nests are works of art.
Yeah, you could have brought in a book with all sorts of examples of birds' nests.
Birds' nests, I suggest you, are artifactual. They're not natural. They are voluntarily constructed. They're, of course, function or as a habitation. They also have an aesthetic quality. They have symmetry, order, and organisation. All of that, I suggest to you, is sufficient to make them works of art.
So
now, what you're going to do, you're going to accept that or deny it?
So, I'm treading on dangerous ground here, because the previous conversation where I suggested that the art activity, or the art related thing, that I could suggest that planting a tree is an art activity in the same terms.
Yes, of course you could. And that's something we could talk about. What I want to know is what kind of talk is it that's properly called putting that idea through the model, as contrasted with the sort of talk that I'm used to, or when somebody says that planting a tree is a work of art. I know a style of talk to handle something like that, that draws on the whole history, the literature of aesthetics and so on. I wonder why this model is superior to the traditional ways of handling questions of that kind.
I'd say it's a superior model to those. It's a way of a group interacting together to keep some sort of control of the function of the group. Because at the point we've reached, where it was really a group of individuals all working really against one another, not with one another.
What control do you need more? What might be called the probity of arguments.
So setting some sort
is said must make sense if people are to accept it. People won't accept it if it doesn't make sense. Isn't that sufficient control?
Not necessarily. If there's agreed boundaries, everyone's in agreement to a certain set of boundaries. Because when you pass rocks, you've been in discussion groups where you can go right on a tangent. The total irrelevancy. It's hard to get back up into the.
But your model doesn't seem to have any rules of relevance in it. Suppose you would say you think that birds' nests are works of art, and I said no, of course they're not. They don't have pale green auras. Now, how would you be able to rule that out of the model as irrelevant?
That's a real touchy one, too. How can you have rules of relevance in an art model when art should be open to determining relevance in whatever way it feels is necessary?
Well, I tried. It was his suggestion, not mine, that the model provides some rules of relevance.
Did you say relevance? I think what he was saying was we needed parameters of discussion. Topics or ways, a methodology.
Yes. Ways of confining the discussion or stopping its sprawling. I can translate that as rules of relevance. Well, okay, I think that the colour of the aura of the object is terribly important to the question whether it's a work of art or not. So, how does your model constrain me not to say things like that? It's obviously a silly thing to say. What's wrong with the ordinary rules of intellectual discourse? But everybody can see that's a silly thing to say. We don't need a model to see that.
Why is it so silly? The colour of the aura. You're talking about an electrical observable thing that science has determined around fingertips and so on. The electrical discharge of auras around our body.
Am I?
Are you? I'm asking you. Because the colour of the aura then might be something quite interesting to.
I was just drawing on some of the jargon from theosophy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this
Deleuze, what's his name?
You tend to bring in examples that I don't see as earthbound and they tend to be off the planet, like the extraterrestrials. I know what your argument is, if someone who has any idea of what the Earth's about when it comes to the planet.
When I say birds' nests aren't works of art because they don't have pale green auras, you know the right answer to that, and your right answer is look, why do works of art have to have pale green orange? You know that without having modeled orange.
See, I don't think, if you came up with the idea of business or art, that would be, to me, a finite statement. It's finished, that's where it ends. You've established yourself. You wouldn't bother bringing that to a group to discuss because you'd already established it. Why would you talk about it? Because there doesn't seem to be anything to talk about. Business, in your opinion, or art. And if you're bringing the problem,
I might very well be doubtful about it. How about something I am doubtful about? Doesn't seem to me that Duchamp's ready-mades are works of art. In spite of the history of the business, in spite of the way they have been incorporated into the canon, the texts, and so on, I think a mistake has been made. I think the ready-mades are not works of art.
So then,
let's talk about that.
You must be
bringing. I agree with that.
You must be bringing some of the reference and the research you've done to substantiate that, and then you put it in a social term, analogy, about why, when they relate to people, that they're not art, in relationship to something else that you maybe assume to be art. Then other people will know what the context is there and can maybe come in on the conversation about it as well, because maybe other people have had different experiences with the Duchamp or whatever pieces, and can communicate from their experience. So hopefully your experience about the situation grows because they know the context that you're dealing with. I don't just bring it in and say, I think nothing's a really good thing because it leaves me free to be whatever I want to be. I can try and put the nothing that I was talking about into a context that people can understand, and therefore we can communicate it rather than just being an abstract thing that I bring in. It doesn't seem to fit in anywhere. Does that make sense?
It seems to be confused now, the term model. Through my education experiences, the models abound left, right, and centre, as you obviously know. There's all sorts of educational models. So how do you explain what you feel a model is? How do you explain, how do you describe what you think a model is?
Well, it's simplest, I suppose. A model of anything is an artifact or a natural object chosen to function as an artifact, which...
I don't mean that model. That's not the model I'm talking about. You're talking in sculptural terms, three-dimensional terms. Just jumping ahead of...
Model is a more general term than representation, I suppose. But very roughly, they're synonymous, the first approximation anyway. Models are representations. They are representations designed usually to bring out some feature of their object rather prominently, to put other features of the object in the background.
Sounds like a more formal model.
Well, you model the state of the weather, for instance, by drawing isobars representing the distribution of areas of equal pressure. So what you see on the TV is a model of the state of the weather. It's grossly simplified in such a way as to bring out certain features of the weather pattern that are of particular interest.
How would you describe a teaching model? Or how would you identify a teaching model?
Well, I don't think I know what you mean.
Well, that's
a teaching model.
Are
you thinking of, for example, an account of human nature or infantile nature that is used by teachers? You say, children are automata with a learning process such that if you dump them with a ruler and they misbehave, they will after a certain time, etc., etc. This is a model of the subjects of the learning process.
That's not
very conspicuously bad model.
Is this
what you mean by model?
Well, that's offering conditioning to a model.
Yeah.
From
is that what you mean by making
a model? Yeah, there's humanist models, there's gestalt psychology models, and so on. There's untenable. That's the sort of model I'm talking about.
Yes.
And I think this is...
So we don't have
this model
about the way we're using the word model.
No, that's the model we're...
Models are representations simplified in such a way as to bring out some feature of the object that is modeled with special significance.
No, the thing bothers me is the model
can't replicate its object completely in all respects, or if it does, it will be useless. There's no point in modeling a person. If we want to understand what a person is, we construct models, we construct anatomical models, and physiological models, and psychological models, and so on. There is no point in constructing an identical person as a model of that person, for that is totally unimportant.
Can we construct a model of a system? Like the weather, I thought, wasn't an object. In your case, I thought the weather was a representation or a model of a system of climatic changes and so on, that the isobars didn't refer to an object so much as they did a set of conditions.
Mm. Well, not an object of state.
Mm. See, I can't attempt to use the word object.
It's really hard.
It might seem at the moment I would substitute the word concept instead of...
I'm taking object in a very ordinary common sense sort of way. There are some relatively compact physical objects, like teacups, tables, and so on. And there are more sprawling, distributed objects, like houses and countries. And there are even more distributed, tenuous objects, like clouds.
You're talking about physical things all the time.
Well, I'm expanding on the problem, obviously, physical. From clouds to, let's say, the distribution of water vapor in the atmosphere over a strait, to the general climatological changes of the last century. These are all individuable things. Some of them are processes. There's nothing odd about the notion of a process being an individual. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is a process.
It's not an object.
Yes, of course it's an object. Something to which we can attend. Because it's distributed in time, we have to attend to it over time. Events are individual.
The process.
Processes are individual. Political processes, political events. The election last Saturday was a political event. We can individuate, that we can separate out from other events, that we can attend to.
This attempt to contain things, that's what bothers me. Being a person who wants to expand things and find their overlapping, connected kind of similarities or where they join one another, that the way you describe the world tends to contain it into words like object and separate things into things rather than into talking about processes or systems.
Well, I'm suggesting
or
processes
things
are
overlap.
You begin with things that can be talked about. And then you start asking how many different sorts of things there are. Well, there are lots of sorts of things. There are rainbows, and there are pieces of music, and there are half kilos of salted fish, and there are bills of lading, and there are insurance policies, and there are quarks.
And these things produce these larger problems.
States of disappointment, and heaven knows how many. Kinds of thing.
What produces what? Does the thing produce the process that changes it, or does the process result in things as kind of appearances that happen along the way in the great kind of system of constant change
well,
and proliferation?
That's another question that traditional philosophical answers, I suppose, are that processes are mediated by virtue of the interaction of things upon one another by causal interaction, but they're mediated by voluntary intervention, mechanism on the one hand and teleology on the other. and that they are form mediated or changed by God, or the mind of God, in the middle of the universe, or something of that sort. That's a third possibility. There are three or four major options.
But do you see the kind of the flip-flop of the way of speaking that's possible if you bring things into containments, into objects? And we take a view that perhaps the processes, these mediating processes, result in appearances, that is, things, at one point or another along the way, which are then changed and die and reform and come up in another visual kind of appearance, and that perhaps what is important more than looking at the thing is the process that changes, mediates, alters it, and results in a new appearance. That's my difficulty with the way you're speaking, is the containment versus the mediating forces of change and alteration that seem to me to be really quite
significant. If you are stuck, I was charged a moment ago thinking in terms of relatively compact physical objects, which I was not doing. I wonder if I'm not doing that. I'm conceiving of objects as virtually grammatical objects, that is to say, things, those entities about which something can be said. The grammatical objects of sentences, these are the only objects that are discussable. We can only discuss those things that we can talk about. Mm. That can form the grammatical objects of sentences.
Agreed.
We can only discuss emotions, stars, wills of God, intelligence of extraterrestrials, teapots, grammatical objects.
Does that leave out discussing processes as part of a grammatical possibility?
Now, particular processes are individual. They're things. The political process by which West Australia achieved a new government last week is a discussable thing. An entity, if you don't like the thing. Individual entity, if we don't like object.
It's just the
it's something we can talk about.
Sure. It's just the ordinary language is really complicated.
There's nothing wrong with ordinary language. Mm. Up to that point. So of course, as soon as one becomes intensely analytical,